gentlemen, it is that time of year where the boys of Awesomania do their one-time special of the Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, Mike, being joined by your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What up? It's me, your boy.
And he is not on camera, so we don't know if he's wearing a shirt. Mr. Fatimus Prime, Matt Carroll.
What's up, buddy?
All right. So with that, as I mentioned, this is our Hall of Fame special.
It's a mini-sode.
It's a mini-sode, yes. And we have like about 11 inductees going into the Hall of Fame.
Technically 12, since one of them's a tag team.
Well, no, I counted them as a tag team.
No, you didn't.
I would have done 12. Well, I did 11.
Three individual.
Times three.
One women. That's 10. Plus the two members of the tag team is 12.
Oh, I counted them as one because we're putting them in as one.
You said 12 people, not 12 inductees.
Oh, I thought I said 11. Anyways, this is Awesomania. This is the Hall of Fame. We don't do it like a normal Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So with that, we are going to kick things off right away. Actually, before we do that, each member of Awesomania gets to induct three individuals. We also mutually agreed on who the female inductee and the tag team and or faction would be for the Hall of Fame. But starting off first, we're going to Matt Carroll with his first inductee into the 2023 Awesomania Hall of Fame.
So my first inductee should be kind of fun. He fits in with actually the era of wrestling that we're watching currently. And it's going to be controversial, but I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and that's Vince Russo.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is when everyone just looks at Matt, points, and laughs.
Why? He was pretty much solely responsible for the entire year of 98, a lot of 97. He was
right, but we've been watching it, and that hasn't been the greatest TV. No, I'm just kidding. I can see why you want to put Russo in. He wouldn't have been my first choice, as we'll find out in a minute. Talk us through why else you want to put him in.
I mean, he was a part of every other. He was a part of TNA, WCW. He was head of creative for both of those for a while. He's a one-time world heavyweight champion. And I mean, honestly, I just think that he's one of those figures that even today we still talk about. So he's still
right. But do we talk about him for good reasons?
Yeah, but that doesn't. You still talk about him, and there's people that you fall on either side of the fence. You either love Russo or you hate Russo. Either way, I feel like.
So bear in mind that last year we put Legion of Doom in, and I kind of hate inducted them so that we'd never have to talk about them again. Which side of the fence do you fall on, Matt? Do you love Russo or do you hate Russo?
So I think I fall on the love Russo side, and I'll tell you why, because everybody else hates him so much. And like, I follow him on Twitter. I've interacted with him a few times. He seems like a nice dude. He seems like a misunderstood dude. But I don't know. I like Vince Russo, so that's why I decided to put him in the Hall of Fame.
All right.
Mike,
your opinion on Russo?
No comment, because I mean, and honestly, as you guys know, I started watching technically at the tail end of the Attitude Era. He was in WCW. Yeah. I was not watching WCW. Yeah. I did not watch the Russo TNA at all.
See, I think I might be the only person in this call that did watch the Russo era of TNA.
So that's also around the time when wasn't Russo there? Then that's when Bischoff and Hogan kind of came in too, like shortly after, or was that or was it the other way around?
No. So Russo was largely responsible for TNA creative in the like the very early days.
Oh,
like when they were doing the weekly pay-per-views and stuff.
Okay, yeah, I definitely wasn't watching the weekly pay-per-views right away.
It was even before they got their TV deal. Back when they were still using the square ring was a lot of Russo. He was the person who was responsible for Jeff Hardy around the time when Jeff Hardy first came in. There's a lot of crap going on there. His run as so there was this. Trying to think of a way to explain this that actually might make it sound as not crap. So Russo started this whole faction that totally wasn't the NWO, but was absolutely the NWO because they were just trying to take over TNA, called Sports Entertainment Extreme. But Extreme didn't have the first E on it. So their thing was sex, and it was very much what the Jericho Appreciation Society are doing right now in AEW, where TNA were making a big thing about, oh, we're a good wrestling company, and Sport Entertainment Extreme is like, we're sports entertainment. And yeah, it's why I don't really enjoy the Jericho Appreciation Society stuff, because it reminds me way too much of SEX. It's just also it involves Sammy Guevara, who can just get in a bin. But yeah, I think I come down on the I dislike Vince Russo side of things. Not that I don't acknowledge what his contributions to the business have been. That doesn't mean I have to like the guy, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm still kind of like on the indifferent, just because really I never.
Yeah, because
really
you haven't had a whole lot of experience with him, have you?
Yeah.
All right. So who's your first inductee, Mike?
My first inductee is Nick Bockwinkel. It's well known that I'm big on the history side of things, and Nick Bockwinkel is actually one of those wrestlers who really helped usher in, or actually inspired a lot of the in-ring psychologies. Like if you looked at how he did his promos, how he was like very methodical with how the word usage, like Chris Jericho modeled his heel run against Shawn Michaels off of Nick Bockwinkel.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's like a multiple time heavyweight champion, four times with the AWA, two times with Georgia Championship Wrestling. He's a WWE Hall of Famer, NWA Hall of Famer. You know, he was in he won the AWA World Tag Team Championship three times with Ray Stevens. You know, he had a really good career, and he actually helped put AWA on the map, especially during the territory era. Like, he was the guy that Vern Gagne could actually lean on to help lead the charge. So Nick Bockwinkel is my first inductee for the Awesome Mania Hall of Fame.
It doesn't make any – you're not going to get any complaints from me on that.
Bockwinkel. Me either. He's one of the GOATs.
So,
not as much controversy to talk about there.
No. I mean, trust me, we still have plenty of controversy coming up on this. Probably. Looking at you, Matt. Ben, who's your first inductee?
All right, my first inductee is going to continue my theme of inducting greats from the English scene, and my quote unquote English inductee this year is the one and only Nigel McGuinness. I mean, I'm not sure if you two ever experienced getting to watch Nigel McGuinness wrestle in his prime. like when he was in Ring of Honor in 2000, when he was doing the pure stuff in 2003. He had an amazing feud with Chris Hero in 2007. He, like, and even after he left Ring of Honor, he went on to do like a bunch of stuff in the independents. He spent a couple of years in TNA. And there's always a very interesting, there's always a very interesting dynamic, because you hear Nigel McGuinness's name brought up a lot in conjunction with Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, as they had a bit of a thing going on. And the only difference between, like, Daniel Bryan will regularly say that the only reason that he got hired in a way that Nigel McGuinness didn't is Nigel was honest about his injuries and Daniel wasn't. So, yeah. And then, I mean, most people listening might know him from his stint as commentary in WWE, where he absolutely knocked it out of the park with the United Kingdom tournament in 2017, I think it was. And then he went on to become a commentator on the actual NXT, and did some work with Mauro, if I remember rightly. And then he did some stuff with and then they got into this weird thing with he disappeared and then came back on 205 Live and Main Event, which I don't know. And then he got furloughed because of the COVID. And then he came back on NXT UK right before it sort of shut down, which is, I don't know. But WWE actually have a really good documentary about Nigel McGuinness called Chasing the Magic, the Nigel McGuinness story. If you want to know any more about Nigel McGuinness, go watch that documentary. It's really good. Yeah, that's my first inductee.
Cool. So with that, our next inductee, Matt, we're going to let you take this one away, because they were your selection of who we decided on for tag team.
So I should say our tag team selection was the Steiner brothers. I don't know why Ben is laughing. They're one of the greatest tag teams of all time, but
I wasn't laughing at you. I wasn't laughing at the Steiner brothers. I was laughing at the way you went, the Steiner brothers.
Oh, okay. I mean, they don't really need any arguing for them either, in my opinion. I mean, I think they're one of the greatest tag teams who ever lived, and, you know, easily have a Hall of Fame career and should be in the WWE Hall of Fame too. But that's why our Hall of Fame is better. We include people that they don't.
Steiners literally just went in last year.
A, they went in, and B, did they? We don't need permission to put people in our Hall of Fame.
That's true.
Do it.
I mean, I didn't see much of the Steiners. The only one I really knew about was Scott, and that was because of his short run in WWE in the Ruthless Aggression era, and then obviously the
big bad booty daddy,
and then the TNA run where the let's just say the greatest promo of all time about math.
Yeah, Steiner math.
They had in the late 80s and early 90s, they were one of those tag teams where at one point they had held held both of the Japanese tag titles. They held the WCW and WWF titles at the time. I think they even not 100%, but I think at one point they did some work at Smoky Mountain, and briefly held the Smoky Mountain tag titles as well. So, you know, they basically were one of those groups where every promotion that they worked for, they held the titles, kind of like the Legion of Doom and all those guys. So, yeah, and they're one of my favorite tag teams of all time. So,
and the other thing I would go so far as to say, if your only experience of the Steiner Brothers is as Big Papa Pump, you've missed out on the better days of the Steiner Brothers. And on top of that, I would also say, we seem to have a theme with our first two tag team inductees that they were tag teams that nobody enjoyed wrestling, because they would just ignore anything anyone wanted to do and just throw them around. Because the Steiners had a very similar reputation to Legion of Doom of like not selling their opponents' moves and just not wanting to do the job for people and things like that. So
I will say the one thing though that I will give them over LOD is that they did sell a little bit more.
Right, they also had what I like to call ring psychology.
Yeah.
Like the Steiners, while they weren't completely interested in like selling a lot of big moves and things, the story of their matches would make sense, right? Like it would make sense for it to go A to B to C to D to E to F to G. Whereas yeah. If you watch a Legion of Doom match, it's A, B, John fucking Madden, F, John fucking Madden Z, John fucking Madden B, right? Yeah. Like it's just what move do I want to do now? Suplex. Oh, I've hit his back. Cool, I'm putting him in an arm bar now. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, the it's undeniable how good the start, what's the word I'm looking for?
Deserving,
just yeah. How many championships they held? How important they were to wrestling and things. Yeah, it's undeniable that they should be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Mike, your thoughts on the Steiners?
I mean, of the little I've seen, because I remember seeing a couple of their matches when I did like that. Like watch where I tried to watch every WrestleMania like mm-hmm. every day type thing. So I've seen some of their matches. We actually just watched them have a couple matches recently, you know, on the show because of WCW pay-per-views. And unfortunately, the last one we watched was when Scott turned on Rick.
Right, but again, you're into the dark days of the Steiners here. Yeah. We need to take you back to like 93, 94 when they were wrestling.
Yeah.
When they were. Think Bron Breakker's gimmick from NXT 2.0. That's literally Scott Steiner from when they were a tag team.
Yeah.
So, pretty much.
Right down to the weird colors on his singlets.
So, with that. Matt, we're going to loop right back to you because we're going to give Ben some more time because on a couple things.
I know who my third is.
Oh, you know your third? Okay.
I knew who my third was before we started.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But
I'll tell the story of that when we get to the third one.
But Matt, who's your second?
So, again, somebody who kind of fits into the era that we've been watching. And I had an initial theme that I wanted to do for this, and I wanted to do big time Hulk Hogan rivals, you know, and my head went for, especially for WCW, went to two people. And the first of those two people that I'm putting in is maybe arguably after the Stinger, his biggest WCW rival, which would be Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster. Now, Not only was Sullivan good in the ring, he was also the booker for most of the mid-90s, which is, I think, why he had such a long program with Hogan, because he had the book. But with that said, Kevin Sullivan was pretty good in the ring. I liked the Taskmaster gimmick. I thought it was kind of fun. I liked the Dungeon of Doom, except for the Yeti. But yeah, I mean, I think that, again, he's one of those guys where...
I'm going to give you a minute to rethink that answer about the Dungeon of Doom.
I said I liked, like, when I was, you know, 10 and 11 years old.
The Dungeon of Doom fair enough. Cool. Fair enough.
But again, I think that no matter what you think of Kevin Sullivan, he's one of those guys where he needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
So I never really, I don't think I've ever watched him wrestle. Mm-hmm. But I have actually gotten to sit down and actually chat with him. Mm-hmm. Back when we were at MCW, he was there and he actually sat at the podcast table with me for like almost the entire show until he had to go in the ring to do something. And we just talked ring psychology and storytelling in the ring. So he's definitely got the mind of, you know, for the business and how to make things work. And like, it was a very educational conversation, you know, learning the stuff from him when he was like watching the matches and explaining certain things and stuff like that. So that's really the most I can kind of give on Kevin Sullivan on that. Ben?
Kevin Sullivan was always a man that managed to shine despite the gimmicks he gave himself. The whole Taskmaster Dungeon of Doom thing was absolute nonsense. But he still did great. I mean, it was a... Yeah... I mean, he's totally deserving of being in the Hall of Fame just for everything else he did, despite like the fighting Hulkamania, Dungeon of Doom, stupid three-level cage nonsense. yeah, I mean, it's really hard to talk about Kevin Sullivan without mentioning what. I mean, we've been avoiding saying two words, which is Chris Benoit, right? Like the end of Kevin Sullivan's like huge in career, especially with WCW, where it was all based around Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit and the whole thing with woman and things, so. But yeah, I definitely think that Matt's got a good one there. So.
All right. So my next inductee is the inaugural WWE Intercontinental Champion, Pat Patterson, who not only was notoriously a very good wrestler, but was also the first openly gay professional wrestler who came out in the 70s, but was not acknowledged by WWE, at least until 2014, is also considered one of the greatest minds in WWE. He created the Royal Rumble, or the concept behind the Royal Rumble, and was also somebody that pretty much almost everybody who ever walked through the doors of WWE and anything would go to him for advice. He pretty much was like the ultimate, you know, mind there. I mean, I think Vince leaned heavily, I mean, this is just my opinion on this, but I think Vince leaned heavily on Pat Patterson, his knowledge on the business, and pretty much helped WWE become one of the powerhouses that it is today, especially knowing that, you know, Patterson knew when to put himself in the certain positions to make sure things went right. Like, one of the biggest stories was like the first WrestleMania, when you had Hulk Hogan and Mr. T versus Paul Orndorff and Roddy Piper, and you had Muhammad Ali as the, you know, special guest referee. the referee of the actual match was Pat Patterson, because he wanted to make sure that no shenanigans happened, because apparently he was hearing stuff that Muhammad Ali was going to knock somebody out, or Mr. T, you know, make sure Mr. T knew cues and stuff like that. So like, he put himself in positions to help the business move forward as well, and to make sure that nothing bad happened, to also protect the business. And I think that was one of the unique things, because he actually told that story on one of the Legends of Wrestling episodes when they're talking about celebrity involvement and stuff like that. So he helped, you know, make things work when there was fear that it wouldn't work. But not only that, but, you know, he's like, was as a wrestler, though, he was known mostly as a tag team wrestler, because he's had like the NWA San Francisco version of the tag team championship like 11 times. AWA tag team.
This is where Mike starts reading off Wikipedia.
Just a couple things, but yeah. But I just wanted to get the thing in, because what was the one famous tag team partner he always had? And that was
Harold Briscoe.
In WWE, yes, but in the actual wrestling, it was Ray Stevens. That was the one partner he was the most known for having outside of WWE.
What you're saying is your theme this year is I'm going to submit all of Ray Stevens' partners.
Yes.
You've done Nick Bockwinkle.
No, my third one has nothing to do with Ray Stevens.
He's not going in. No, not Ray Stevens.
Not yet. I have somebody else for my third. But overall, I Pat Patterson, he's kind of like the... Like in a way, like one of the godfathers of wrestling, I guess. Mm-hmm. You could say, you know, he was somebody that everyone looked up to in the business.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no denying that. I was just giving you stick.
I know. Mr. Any guys want to comment on Patterson before we go to Ben's next one?
I mean, we got to talk about the evening gown match, right? It's like the highlight of his career.
He actually says it is the highlight of his career. That's the funny part. I mean, he loved it. And that was the thing. I think that was one of the reasons why it's like, you know, it's like you, like when Kurt Angle did his Hall of Fame speech for WWE, and he was like, don't be afraid to like make fun of yourself and do the comedy stuff and don't take yourself seriously. He learned that from Pat. And I think Patterson
No.
Like, think of it like this. Because you just said the evening gown match.
Yeah.
He loved it. He loved the entertainment value. He loved the fact that it was just, you know, entertaining, and it wasn't being taken. He wasn't taking it seriously. And that's
something say that Regal learned that from Pat Patterson.
No, I said Angle.
Oh, Angle. Sorry, Angle. I misheard you then.
Yeah. No, I said Kurt Angle.
Yeah. Okay.
Regal did not get put into the WWE Hall of Fame yet.
Yeah, he did. Oh, William, the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about Austin.
You're the only one that matters.
Yeah. So.
All right, my second. So this is gonna be a little bit controversial. As Mike said when we started recording, this is not an inductee that many people would expect to go in on their own. I am nominating Tully Blanchard. If you watched any of the NWA, and like, you know why Tully should go in on his own. He had multiple singles runs. To boil him down to either going in as a tag team with Arn, or going in as a member of the Four Horsemen is unfair to Tully, especially when you realize that especially in the NWA, he only held the tag team championships 3 times, as opposed to 7 or 8 singles titles. He had a very famous run with the world television title, where he would defend it on TV like literally every week. And then Dusty Rhodes won it, and it disappeared off TV for like 8 months. So the television title was not on television. Yeah, Dusty Rhodes is great, isn't he? Anyway, Yeah, I just I genuinely believe that he deserves to be in on his own, and yeah, that's that really.
Okay, Matt, thoughts on Tully?
I mean, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't he the longest reigning TV champion of all time?
I'm a little fuzzy on the actual, because the weird thing there is yes and no, because the NWA would do this weird thing where they would have title changes happen on like house shows that weren't reflected on TV, right? And I've only watched the TV stuff. So, but yeah, he had that brilliant United States title match with Magnum TA. He had the I Quit match with Magnum TA. That if you've not watched that match from Starrcade 85, go watch it. There was a whole thing with he had Baby Doll as his manager for a long time, which was absolutely fantastic. He had an absolutely brilliant match at one of the Starrcades with Ricky Steamboat, which was awesome.
He's a great wrestler. He deserves to be in there no matter what. Like I said, I do believe that he was the longest reigning TV champion of all time. And like you said, he's one of those guys that you could have him in there wrestling with one of my crutches right now, and it would be a great match.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I unfortunately for me, I didn't. I think Tully was retired by the time I started watching wrestling. So anything I see would have been like clips or archival stuff, or mostly because of the Four Horsemen stuff. So
yeah, so apparently they're saying that he had the longest at 353 days, just under a year.
I thought so.
Yeah.
So with that, we have now our women or female inductee. And this one was, I mean, everyone agreed on this one, but this was a Ben pick or yeah, Ben it, nomination.
It was like, everyone was like, oh, I've got this person. Oh, they're really good. And Matt was like, oh, I've got this person. And the boat was like, yeah, really good. And I was like, so we had three very good nominees this year that we discussed amongst ourselves and picked this person from. But it's probably the single most no-brainer pick for the Women's Hall of Fame, which is Trish Stratus. I mean, there's only one person that I would put in more than them, but I'm not putting them in right now. But yeah, Trish Stratus, enough said.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean yeah.
She was one of the first females to ever main event Monday Night Raw. Mm-hmm. So, and it was a great match. Best match on the card that night. So,
like, it's really hard to, like, we talked a lot about some of the other like male inductees, and it feels really bad to just be like, Trish Stratus, why should she go in? Duh. Like, but I mean, the level of improvement she showed from when she began to when she ended, the impact she had on women's wrestling, the echoes of which are felt to this very day. Like, people we are watching wrestle right now are here because of Trish, because of other wrestlers in that era that she wrestled with really well.
And she had to kiss Vince McMahon. I mean, that alone, having to kiss Vince McMahon should get you into every Hall of Fame just for having to put yourself through that.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the legendary match at WrestleMania with Mickey, the feud she had with Lita, she's responsible for TNA, Test and Albert, the program she had with Jericho and Christian, like there are so many things that she did that were so very good. But yeah, Trish Stratus, guys.
Yep. And Matt, we're looping on back to you. Who's your final inductee into the AwesomeMania Hall of Fame?
I mean, I think this is the most no-brainer of all of my picks. And
Randy Anderson.
Yeah. Little Nate. No, it's Todd Pettengill. it would be the Stinger, boys.
Look,
two of the last three shows that we've recorded have been all about Sting and Hogan. You know, you don't really need to say much about why Sting should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, like earlier you said, because we knew what each other's picks were ahead of time. Earlier you were like, oh yeah, I'm going for like Hogan opponents, and other than Sting, blah 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 blah, I was like, they just gave away your last pick, dude.
So
I mean, yeah, it's Sting. I mean, insert audio clip of Tony Schiavone.
Yeah,
it's Sting.
Anyway. It's Sting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't say anything bad about Sting. I mean, he really was one of the big factors of actually helping put TNA really on the map, or in actually really not on the map, but help grow it, I guess you can say, when he came in. I mean, the feuds that he had in TNA were like, I know him more for his TNA stuff than I know for his WCW.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean he was more influential in TNA. It just means that you're young.
That too. I am that too. So,
like, Sting was absolutely the. Yeah, I mean,
he was WCW.
He was WCW.
Yeah.
And he fought them for like a year and a half, and then joined the Wolfpack.
Yeah.
Because I don't know reasons.
Yeah. Everyone did, but
not everyone joined the Wolfpack.
No, I mean NWO, like Wolfpack, NWO. Somebody was always joining some of those things.
Yeah.
Mike,
who's your third?
So, interestingly enough, my third was a Sting opponent, but was not really known for that. He is a 14-time heavyweight champion, 5-time Intercontinental champion.
Stop reading Wikipedia. Just say his name.
And it is the game, Triple H.
Yeah.
God, let me put in some of the title accolades, good sir.
Get to his name first. There's been a structure to this thing, Mike.
Wait, sir, this is AwesomeMania. We have structure.
Fair.
But I mean, this is also kind of like, I mean, especially now that he's retired, he becomes a little bit more of a no-brainer at this point as well for him, for Triple H. I mean, just look at the career he's had. You know, as I just mentioned, 14-time heavyweight champion, 5-time Intercontinental champion, European champion, tag team champion, King of the Ring, 2 Royal Rumbles. I mean, he's been, I mean, and, you know, Uncle Dave, you know, Wrestling Observer, you know, has put him in like feuds of the year and stuff like that. And, you know, we always, like, as fans, especially during the Ruthless Aggression era, we always joked, and Matt, you can chime in on this one, like, we would always joke about, like, how Triple H would always bury guys, but he really, I mean, unless he didn't like you, he probably did, but he lifted up a lot of guys. Like, he put Randy Orton on the map, he put Batista on the map, you know, and countless others, like, that he saw had, you know, could be huge stars, he built them up, you know. So, like, Triple H was just one of those guys who just knew the business, loved the business, and we're kind of reaping the benefits now of him at the head of creative for WWE now as well. Matt, your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, how could you go wrong with Triple H? And I mean, from probably 99 to maybe 04, he was the WWE, in my opinion. I mean,
yeah.
I think that he was, you know, you look at all his greatest feuds, you know, the feud with Mick Foley was amazing. His stuff with The Rock was great. His work with Shawn Michaels was great. His work with Evolution was incredible. And he's a part of two of the most iconic factions of all time. And he's a big reason why they're so iconic. You know, I mean, he's also a no-brainer pick.
Ben, your thoughts on Triple H?
It's very hard to disagree with what you guys have already said. So, I will, however, say that Triple H has something in common with a couple of other people that we've discussed today already, which is the infamous golden shovel. A lot of people would discount him for that, but...
Well, we brought it up, but also at the same time, like, I think with the golden shovel, it's like, if he didn't like you, he really buried you, but there was still a lot of talent that he elevated at the same time. So it's like, it really kind of depends on like how you want to look at it in that respect. Because like he elevated Randy Orton, he elevated Batista, he elevated Cena when it was his time to really kind of give him that time. Because he didn't have to, I mean, I don't think he ever beat Cena like on the big stages, like in the bigger matches all the time. So like, you know, it depended on who he was going to bury and who he was going to raise, because he did elevate quite a few stars as well.
Yeah, maybe. But he definitely buried some too.
No. I'm not disagreeing that he buried. I know
there was that really weird racism angle he did with Booker T that totally wasn't about racism, but was absolutely about racism.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is he deserving to go in the Hall of Fame? 100%. But we would be remiss to not talk about some of the failings and some of the stuff about trips. So.
Katie Vick. What?
Well, in all fairness, it's come out since then that there's been a whole lot of sort of... that wasn't the intended way that was supposed to go. And
yeah, I also don't think Triple H wanted to do some of that stuff either.
Yeah.
So with that, Ben, once again, headliner spot.
Headliner spot is dubious. Earlier, Mike introduced us to the first ever Intercontinental Champion. And my final inductee is going to be the person that I am genuinely surprised is not in the Hall of Fame yet. You might call him the most perfect Intercontinental Champion, Kurt Hennig. I'm just going to stop now and let Matt talk about Rap Is Crap if he wants to.
Greatest country song of all time.
But yeah, I mean, it's Mr. Perfect. It's Kurt Hennig, right? Like, do I need to say any more?
No.
I've said that a lot today, but like, He's one of the greatest in-ring performers of all time. The Mr. Perfect vignettes that they would do with him throwing a pass to himself, or the shot behind his back and all that kind of thing. The story that Wade Boggs told. Kurt Hennig.
Yep.
Also, his son is the current reigning longest Royal Rumble entrant of all time.
These are facts.
So does that mean that that Curtis Axel has won every Royal Rumble since that?
Yep.
That one.
Yep.
Dude, that would be a great storyline. They should just do that. Like, he comes back to claim that he's the Royal Rumble winner of all Royal Rumble winners.
But yeah, Kurt Hennig was just... he was so good. Yes, his later stuff in WCW and the little bit of stuff he did in TNA weren't his best work, and especially in TNA you could see that he was a little out of shape, and he never really sort of you never see him really wear the singlet. He was always in like cowboy boots and jeans and stuff. But yeah, just I mean, it's Kurt Hennig. What else do I say? Mike?
I've seen some of the matches that he had, like, for our watch-throughs and stuff like that, but, like, I only saw a sample size, but, like, one thing I've always heard about Kurt Hennig was he was always a massive ribber backstage. Like, he would always be pulling ribs on the boys in the back and stuff like that. I've more heard the backstage stories than really seen the in-ring, but like of the matches I have seen, that I've always been like, and I'm talking about like the old WWE stuff. Mm-hmm. I was always impressed by what he was able to do in the matches and how he was able to play an effective heel as well in all of his matches. So
to Mike's point on the ribbing, one of my favorite current heading rib stories was when Lex Luger first came to the WWE. As Narcissus, he had these little tassels around the waistband of his jeans or of his trunks, mm-hmm. and every day Kurt Hennig would pull one of the little tassels out, the little frilly pieces, and they said eventually you could just see them starting to get the gap between the tassels get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and it used to piss Kurt Hennig, it used to piss Lex Luger off so badly. But that's just one of those, like, during the middle of the match he would just apparently just go pull one out, and I don't know why I think that's such a funny rib, but it is. But also
the time around 1991, 1992, 1993, when he's working with Flair.
Yeah.
It's just some of the best TV. And 90% of that time, he's a commentator.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and not only that, but also, I mean, just solely alone, his two matches with Bret Hart that he had on television are two of the greatest matches in the history of wrestling, in my opinion.
And, I mean... when trying to think of when it was a Survivor Series, I think, or was it a SummerSlam where Ric Flair recruited Razor Ramon.
Oh, that was Summer. That was Survivor Series
to fight Savage, and we didn't know who Savage's tag partner was going to be, and then it was Mr. Perfect, and the pop he got was just brilliant. it was enough. He also had, and again, I'm still talking about, I've not got into anything else. Like Mr. Perfect, his entrance music might have been the most pitch perfect entrance music in the history of ever. Everything about the way they presented him was perfect.
He never whiffed on the gum slap
or the towel catch or
pencil flip at the desk.
The pencil flip.
Yeah.
But like you can even go back to like 1986, I think, when he was in the AWA and he was managed by Dime DDP. You can go to he had a run in, I remember someone telling a story about him and his dad, Larry, beating Rip Oliver and Matt Bourne for the tag titles in the Pacific Northwest. And then there was the whole, and to go back to the Golden Shovel thing, the only thing that kept him from being WWF champion was Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
Right.
Mike, do you know the Wade Boggs story?
I've heard Wade Boggs tell the story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like the batting practice or something like that. And
no.
Or not that one.
They went hunting. And Wade Boggs caught his leg on a barbed wire fence. And it tore his leg open and he couldn't walk. And they were probably about a mile and a half, 2 miles from their truck. And Kurt Hennig picked him up and carried him the whole way back to the truck. And he basically said, yeah, I probably would have died if Kurt hadn't been there because I'd have bled out.
I didn't hear that story. I heard Boggs do a different story. I think it was about like a batting practice session or something that they're doing.
Yeah.
And so I heard that story, but I didn't hear that story. So,
I remember very vividly, because I was a huge Ric Flair fan, right? And I was a huge Mr. Perfect fan. So I loved the fact that they were working together. And then the program through 92 and 93 happened. And then there was that one just random Monday Night Raw in 1993, where out of nowhere it became a loser leaves town match, and Ric Flair was just gone.
It was the first Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, it might have been the first or the second, I can't remember. But it was just like, it kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kurt Hennig, man. That's my third inductee.
So with that, we have done all of our inductions. So the 2023 Austin Mania Hall of Fame class is Vince Russo, Nick Bockwinkel, Nigel McGuinness, the Steiner Brothers, Kevin Sullivan, Pat Patterson, Tully Blanchard, Trish Stratus, Sting, Triple H, and Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. So with that... Matt, where can the people find?
Hang on a minute. I just realized two of the people we just mentioned are still wrestling.
Trish and
Sting.
Sting, yeah.
Please retire, Sting. You scare me every time you jump off something very high.
Like, I want to save that conversation for our WrestleMania episode that we're about to record because I want to talk about that, given how Trish just came back.
So
I want to talk, but that will be next episode, everybody. Yeah. Which will literally be like next week because we're recording these episodes back to back.
Yar.
So with that, Matt, where can the people find you on social media?
That they can find me on the Instagram at the coolest fat kid you know.
And Ben, where can the people find you on the social media?
You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T Goldfish.
You can find me doing the video game thing with my good friend Jordan Johnson and my wife Amy over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And you can find me on the sister show to Awesome Mania, Voices from the Grid, alongside Michael and our friend Sasha and Brian. Voices of the Grid being a Power Rangers review podcast that we do. You can find it on Twitter at
@VFTG_PR, which also, if you click on the bio link, it'll take you to our link tree, which will take you to our direct site on TXHDHockey.com, Spotify, Google Podcast, and I believe that's it, because that's all we have really for
VFTG. And you'll be able to find everyone's individual Twitters there as well, I believe.
Yeah, it's in the bio. Yeah, all the individuals.
So yeah, that's me.
And then for me, you can find me on Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, which I actually have now my own link tree thanks to Voices from the Grid. Thanks for the inspiration. Which will take you to my Twitch at twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75.
No. You don't get to say I've got a link tree and then list all your links.
And I'm only listing.
Tell them what your link tree is.
It's literally Linktree the Lindenbaum X75.
But all right, you can't, like, I'm setting up to do this thing, and you're like, no, we've got a Linktree. Just go there, find the website, and all the other stuff.
I mean, for the VFTG one, I did say
I'm talking about me. I'm going to mention my Linktree and all of my links.
Ego. But yeah, but at the end of the day, everything's also on txhdhockey.com/x75productions / awesome.
It is, for us. I will say this, it is way easier to just go to the website and use the drop down.
Yep. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, Ben, take us out.
It's been the Hall of Fame. Been many deserving people, and Vince Russo, I guess. That being said, we'll leave you as we always do, by saying guys, gals, non-aligned pals, and all those beyond that spectrum, in the words of the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, my friends,
and until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace.